Great. Thank you very, very much. This is a group of people. They're a tough act to follow. There's a lot of great information here, and I'm really happy that we were able to put this together. Just a quick note, there are a couple of handouts that go with this presentation that are on the back table. One is there's a poster. This is also a free download from the website of the same name, so you can get a free color poster to carry around. And Alicia just finished talking about the 6 sins of greenwashing, which are now 7. There's also a flyer for the new report called the 7 sins of greenwashing. I'm not sure which is the new sin. I think the sin of worshiping false labels. I believe that's it. Let's see. I have no relationships to disclose in terms of this presentation, but one thing I do want to point out, which is a point of view I wish to talk about in advance, is that the whole field of greenwashing and false marketing claims and the use of green cleaning products is a really, really complex area. It's a complex set of issues. Turns out to be a lot harder than anybody thought it was going to be a number of years ago. There are many, many layers to it. There are many players, and the chemical industries are not particularly happy about the use of green cleaning products generally. So I really want to encourage the environment and the occupational health sections and any of the other sections who are interested to sort of build on this presentation, if you will, and sort of flesh this out with some more work next year. I think it would be really, really valuable. We literally are just scratching the surface here. The second is that a lot of the terms and the definitions of how green is green and what are you really engaged in and how are you framing out state policies, which is my job to talk about here, reminds me in some ways of 15 years ago or so, the early days of integrated pest management, when how you said what you said made all the difference. It made the difference between whether or not you were a good guy or a bad guy. And it came home to me in a way when A senior staff from the American Lung Association in New England said, when we were going through and trying to develop model bill text for some of the states, he said, "This is beginning to remind me of our old tobacco wars." So I thought that was a very, very interesting piece of information. And so everyone wants to be green. And how do buyers and users avoid false marketing claims and green? There are some things that individual consumers can do. There are things that private sector entities can do. But there are also things that public agencies can do. And we're going to talk here about states, cities, and school districts, and particularly the green cleaning laws that have been enacted in 10 states in the last 5 years. And that's pretty fast change. So we'll take a look at how environmental reforms have been working so far. If you are a public interest environment organization or a public health organization and you're interested in getting green products into a marketplace, you're probably going to go down the left-hand column here and look at, as has been described by Alicia and Elise and Cheryl, of comprehensive multiple attributes. You're going to look at the environment attributes, the life cycle, the health attributes. You're going to look at chemicals concern. There's a federal executive order that goes back into the early 90s that defines environmentally preferable purchasing as having a reduced effect on human health and the environment. It goes on at some length. States, in some cases, and public agency purchasers, and you have to remember school districts are local public agencies, may rely on recognized third-party certifiers. And as described, these are consensus-based, transparent, and verifiable standards for classes of products. There's also in the environmental community a new, sort of a more recent call for something called full disclosure of all ingredients. And you also heard Cheryl describe as whether it's Ecologo or Green Seal or another independent third-party certifier, they actually go up the marketing, the sales stream and try to determine all the ingredients within the product by literally doing site visits and manufacturing visits. So the question is, if you are a chemical company interested in maintaining market share or keeping a conventional product on a purchasing list, what would you do? What would you look for? Well, one of the things you might do is begin to look for more creative definitions of green. You might also want to limit the attributes. You might want to look for things that are, as it was on the earlier slide, in Alicia's, things that are just green or slightly safer, or it may save a little bit more energy, or it's advertised as healthy, or it has reduced VOCs, or it's toxic-free. But there's nothing really attached to that that you can verify. In terms of the full disclosure call to action, there's also there's pushback there, of course. There are a number of different product labels and material safety data sheets and company websites that will talk about ingredients, but the question is it really full disclosure of all ingredients? There is some mixed interest in terms of the chemical industry in this. Some of you may know that New York State has a very old law in the book, it's about 30 years old or so, which actually requires any cleaning product in the state to have full disclosure of all ingredients. The New York State Department of Environmental Conservation in this fall made a recent decision to enforce that law and has put together an advisory committee to try to figure out how to do it. We'll see what happens to that. So again, going through how a state might arrange for procurements policies, they might want to define the scope or the products that are being covered. And again, if you're a public interest environment or public health organization, a worker health and safety group, you're going to want to look for some specific classes of products. You want to specify exactly what class of products you're talking about. And you also want to see a process for educating and educate the implementing agencies and the facility staff so they know what they're doing. On the other hand, if you'd like to avoid all of that, you might want to list classes of products, but you might also want to expand the list or shrink it. And in the case of expanding it, you might want to include products that are not part of general cleaning, which helps to sort of confuse the overall agenda if you're looking at bill text. For example, we've had a couple of states where the bill has suddenly included promoting the use of disinfectants. And we also heard from one of those states that the industry had told school facility directors in the state of Maryland that a pending green cleaning bill would effectively ban the use of all disinfectants in the states in those schools. At the same time, there was a journal article in the spring of 2009 which also confused general cleaning with disinfecting. And doing a very detailed analysis of that, we discovered that most of the citations were misquotes. It was an extensive piece of research. We also have seen Clorox as a corporation partnering not only with environmental organizations, but also with education associations from 2006 forward to include Clorox wipes in schools. And
not the
MT. Well, you know, it's very interesting. There was a comment about, you know, on the slide, I can't remember, was it Elisa's slide about Clorox perhaps? A slide which indicated that, you know, just don't have the children carry it, but the parents should hand deliver it. My office gets calls from folks all the time. We had a call just happily a couple of days ago from a very alert mom in Montana who said, my child really is developing a lot of rash problems. It's the children who are cleaning their own desks with the Clorox wipes, not anybody else, and they're doing it after every period. So it's multiple uses during the day on every desktop. Not a plan that most moms would want. So going on then a little bit more in terms of state procurement policies. You do have to authorize a state agency, or if you're in a city agency to be the lead agency here. And you may need to specify if you're looking at bill language or bill text or a resolution or an executive order, exactly how they're going to select green products. So in some of the stronger states, the authorization has really gone to an agency that has some experience in the key claim areas. And the key claims are around health, environment, and procurement policies. So the authorizations typically go to an administrative or general services agency or a health or environment agency. And then you would also want to say, how are they going to be selected? And you can use text either calling out deliberately that it is a Green Seal or Eco Logo labeled or other independent third-party certified products. You may also want to call out specific chemicals of concern. You may also want to have a state open it up to public comment. And then in, there have been some, also some terrific additions to that kind of thinking, including how a final product list is updated, how it's distributed, what kind of annual reports or biannual reports there need to be back to government or the legislature, what kinds of notices need to be filed. It's an extensive process. On the other hand, looking at the right-hand side now, if you are an industry association which is not particularly interested in having a product list change, what would you look at? Well, one way to do it is to tag an agency that doesn't have any experience in environment or health or in purchasing in general. And in that case, you might look at the education agency, which historically in all the states has stood apart and is not part of the executive agencies in most states. There is actually an annual update on who's in charge of education in the states. It's done by a group called NASB, the National Association of State Boards of Education. And I think the number is currently 9 states have a governor which both appoints the volunteer board for the state education system and also appoints the commissioner. So that will give you a little bit of a fix on how complicated the education lawmaking can be. Another thing that we've seen in terms of industry opposition to a strong reform is something called listing multiple avenues for selecting products. And this means that products may be self-certified, and I think Alicia had some examples of people just, here's my label, we're green, and throwing it on. Other labels, entities that do not, in fact, certify cleaning products, for example, the U.S. Green Building Council. We've also seen stakeholder committees that must include the chemical industry that help whatever the agency is to define what a green product is. So there have been, as I mentioned when I started, there have been 10 laws enacted in 10 different states. Actually it's a little more than that now. And we wanted to take a quick look at this. I will not pretend that this is a detailed bill analysis of every bill, but it's what fits on the slide. And so you have to bear with me a little bit. So we'll look at 2 states that have a lot in common and have done really fairly strong bills that environment and health coalitions are very comfortable with. Connecticut, on the left-hand column, was signed in June of 2009. It authorizes the State Department of Administrative Services to create a product list. Green products are comprehensively defined. It requires products to be third-party certified. It requires a notice to parents and staff. It is a mandate on all public schools. The law was supported by an alliance of labor, environment, health, and education groups, a very powerful alliance in Connecticut. That bill was specifically opposed by the Consumer Specialty Products Association and the Soap and Detergent Association. And we have copies, obviously, we have copies of the testimony that was submitted to get the bill amended. New York was the first state to have an executive order and law. It was done in 2005. And New York began with an executive order authorizing, telling all the state agencies to engage in green cleaning. Told this Office of General Services to be advised by Health, Environment, and Education to set it up. And the governor then sent a bill to the state legislature asking them to extend the executive order to all public and private schools in the state, which they did in that session. In the executive order and in that bill, green products are comprehensively defined. They also have a call out for something called sensitive populations, which was defined to be both children who occupy schools as well as custodians who may have more intensive exposures. It is a mandate on the state agencies and a mandate on public and on private schools. Again, this was supported by a very broad alliance of labor, health, environment, and education groups across the state. And it was opposed generally by a variety of chemical industries, manufacturers, and trade associations. And we'll look at 2 other states that have laws that are not quite as strong. They have call out fewer attributes, they have weaker standards. Missouri was signed in the fall of 2008. There are no certifications required. It does require that the education agency consult with the chemical product industry as well as NGOs and others. It authorizes education to be advised by Health and Senior Services with a panel of stakeholders. In fact, the first chairperson of the panel advising the education department was the government relations executive from one of the industry associations. Several environmental activists who were also engaged managed to have the chair replaced, and the education department decided it would chair its own panel. The selection of products is done through, quote, multiple avenues. We'll list as many different things as we can to get green products or products defined as green onto a state list. Fortunately, it's voluntary for all K through 12 schools. It was supported by the International Sanitary Supply Association, which is based in Chicago, as well as some other organizations and industry groups. The good thing about it is that it highlights something called green cleaning. And it promotes the concept, but it does not promote it with a clean, clear definition that really guarantees specific kinds of results. We'll take a look at another bill, which is in Maryland, which was signed in the spring of 2009. Again, no third-party certification is required. It asks for multiple avenues to be included, including the EPA Design for the Environment program, which is not a third-party certification mark. It also calls for, quote, any other deemed appropriate, meaning any other label deemed appropriate by the agency that was setting the standard, which leaves things pretty wide open. In Maryland, each of the 23 county boards of education were to create local purchasing lists. There was no state list here. And green was defined by a smaller collection of attributes that include biodegradability, low toxicity, low VOC content, reduced packaging. All those things are good, but it's also a more constrained list of attributes than a comprehensive list. And then the interesting part is, which I mentioned a little bit earlier, the bill that passed also includes a text in that bill promoting the use of disinfectants. And there was a lot of conversation at the time when the bill was in motion about the use of disinfectants in schools, how critical they were, how important it was to use disinfectants. Nobody should try to ban them. And so it's sort of, and green cleaning products are not disinfectants. They're two separate classes of products, general purpose cleaners, disinfectants. They're different. So it was a way to confuse the field, and it was actually pretty effective. It was specifically supported by Consumer Specialty Products Association, which is the same year they were opposing Connecticut bill, and it was opposed by Soap and Detergent Association, again the same year they were opposing a stronger bill in Connecticut. Maryland was opposed by Maryland PTA and some other organizations that were seeking amendments. There was also a stronger bill pending at the time. In fact, the amendments did not come through. So that was not what you'd consider a great win. So if you look across the 10 states right now in terms of their characteristics, one of the things to keep in mind is after New York moved in 2005, immediately thereafter, in 2006 and 2007 and 2008, the certifiers themselves, Green Seal and Ecologo, and some of the state agencies who were involved in green procurement, began to push for even stronger certification standards. Let's get these cleaned up and let's get these updated. And third-party certifiers do that periodically. There is an update of what the certification standard is. So looking at bills that are similar to Connecticut's relatively strong law passed in 2009. And just one quick note, Connecticut also had a law that had been passed. I think, Nancy, you had mentioned it in your presentation this morning. In 2007, a law on state agencies to use green cleaning products. And then in 2009, it was extended to schools in the state. And it requires third-party certified products. A state executive agency actually leads. It is mandated on schools. New York State and New York City are similar to that. There's also a law in New York City, which is the nation's single largest school district, which requires them to use green cleaning products. Illinois followed in 2007, followed by Hawaii in 2009. So that's on the stronger side. That really covers a number of different, more than 11,000 different school buildings, with a total enrollment of more than 6 million children. Bills that are similar to Maryland, in which third-party certified is not required, the education agency leads, and is a mix of some of its mandated, some of its voluntary, includes a number of great states. Maine in 2007 is a voluntary resolution, but the product list, even though it's voluntary, the product list is listing third-party certified products, and it's a very strong list. And there's some strong-minded groups in Maine that are paying a lot of attention to it. In Missouri, I think you've just heard the short story in Missouri. Iowa is relatively new. Nevada is relatively new. And Tennessee is brand new this spring with a joint resolution to study the use of green cleaning products in schools. So it's hard to say, because of the mix of voluntary and not sure what the standards are, exactly what the coverage or the impact of these are. But again, what I do want to emphasize is that the bills taken as a whole, the state laws taken as a whole, as well as the executive orders, really promote the concept of the use of green cleaning products. And that's a good thing to do. The problem then becomes, you know, what's the definition? How are we using the definition? Who's going to be in charge? How will things be called out? And who will be making decisions? Will there be an update process? Will there be stakeholder involvement? Will there be public comment periods and so forth? Which are all great questions. There are some selected resources I'd recommend for everybody. And again, my primary recommendation is, I think that the environment, the occupational health sections, and anyone else who's interested from other sections should really dive into this in a lot more detail and begin working on some the related issues and strengthening these next year. There are a number of different federal executive orders on environmentally preferable purchasing, along with a history and a text of the executive orders and guidance for the federal agencies that do purchasing. The Federal Trade Commission also has what they call green guides, which is their way of interpreting their regulations on environmental marketing claims. The public comments on their revised green guides, and they're tightening up their standards, are due December 10th this year. Consumer Reports, everybody knows Consumer Reports, buy a washing machine or microwave or whatever. Consumer Reports also has been looking at eco-labels, the world of eco-labels, and almost to the point of how do we determine the differences between all these labels out here? Who's doing what? What's included in the standard? How comprehensive is it? Is it consensus-based and so forth? So they really have charged into this field. The other thing that's very interesting is the New York State green cleaning process that is being really driven by New York State Office of General Services. The first implementing guidelines written by the state were done in the fall of 2006, and they just have completed in 2010 an update to it, which is really wonderful. The state requested and received extensive public comments on how they were going to implement the law. And they have published all the comments, including an analysis of specific eco-labels, label marks, and alternate pathways, or multiple pathways for getting products onto lists, all of which is posted online and available. It's a wonderful website. I really recommend it. Seven Sins of Greenwashing, done by TerraChoice. It's a brand new update. There's a flyer on the back table. And the state policies that we just sort of really just glossed over. My office researched that in September this year, and we also brought with us a handout, the poster for a national collaborative work group on green cleaning and chemical policy and reform in schools. We have up there model bill text, some technical comments, news, archive presentations, and a variety of resources. But it's just one of many resources out there in the field of green cleaning, and particularly in schools, which are of interest because they do have to stay clean, they do buy products all the time, and they're chock full of children. So that's who we are, and thank you very much. And I'm sure, Denise, do you want to help? Help?
My experience with schools is many of them are buying one cleaning product and it's a disinfectant cleaning product and they're cleaning everything with it. I've seen people spraying it on the carpets, putting it on the floors, windows. They don't know what to disinfect and so they're disinfecting everything, especially when they have special needs kids or it's high flu season. So I think we do need more guidance on what to clean and what to disinfect and when. One of the things that we did this pilot project with the child care centers, which is, has some of the most aggressive requirements for disinfectant, and we really studied those requirements. And in different states, some of them will say you have to use bleach, and others of them will just say you have to use a disinfectant. And so we figured out which were the safer disinfectants. That gets at what to disinfect. But the regulations are confusing, and so I think we do need to figure it out. Some of the regulations will say disinfect, and some will say sanitize, and so they don't really know. Disinfection is a stronger standard than sanitizing, so certain things like the diaper buckets or the toys need to be sanitized, but the the potties and the changing tables need to be disinfected for fecal matter. One of the things that we did actually was we had bacterial monitors in the project, and so we actually cleaned and then looked at what level of bacteria. And one of the most effective things that we found is, at least on the floors and things, using microfiber was able to, just with the cleaning product, was able to reduce the amount of bacteria to the point that it was equivalent to using a disinfectant. So a lot of times the germs are they're attached to the dirt. So you get rid of the dirt, you get rid of the germs. And for people who don't know what these are, they were developed for a healthcare environment where you clean a room and then you put it into the laundry instead of taking a mop and putting it back into the bucket and then, then spreading the germs all over the place. So I do agree that there needs to be more guidance, but people actually, the first thing is that they need to even talk about it and think about it because they're just not thinking and just disinfecting.
Can you publish that study on using the microfiber cloth?
That study is in the process of being developed and published by the San Francisco Department of Public Health.
Why don't you take some more? Why don't we
There's a question back
catch
here.
All the questions?
Hi.
It's a great presentation. My question is sort of a two-part, and both to setting criteria and also really looking at what the exposure is of concern and setting appropriate cleaning disinfectant that's geared to that. So to me, what's missing here is that when you talk about a laboratory or certifying something that should be used in a laboratory where you're worried about really disinfecting a counter because of hepatitis B or blood products, there you might want to use Clorox because you have to do it. When you talk about a school desk, it's a totally different situation. What in the world would you be disinfecting? I mean, snot from the kid's nose, influenza. I mean, and there, normal cleaning, and in fact, even in the hospital setting, hand washing with soap and water is the most effective thing that's going between patient rooms, and in fact, for some conditions, they don't even advise you to Purell. So I guess what's missing for me, and you may want to address it, is something that's more exposure targeted. And for a lab, and this is the risk, this is what we're using. So a school with desks, there's no reason to go beyond cleaning. But I'd like to hear from the panel.
You know, I think sometimes the schools use disinfectants because the parents are scared. And you have parents scared about H1N1, and you say, I'm not sending my kid to school until you disinfect the whole damn school. And I think schools find themselves in these really difficult positions. And I think we all have to become more savvy about how do we let people know that their workplaces and the places where their children go to school are safe. The bathrooms in schools are bigger problems than I realized. We tried to write a guidance on how to clean schools, and it's 167 pages. Who is going to read that? So I don't want to minimize where the pressures come from. I want to make us all better consumers, and that includes PTAs and the places where people get their information to make sure their kids, you know, you feel like your kid's safe when they go to school. And I agree. I mean, even the use of the word disinfectant in a school drives me crazy. And I don't think it should be used. But I think we also have to find ways. How do you teach everyone to be a microbiologist and not to believe Clorox and Lysol when they say you really need to do this to be safe?
Can I just add, I just want to add one thing about the Clorox. As part of our childcare pilot project, we studied all the registration documents for Clorox and determined that actually Clorox bleach, which is used extensively through almost every facility, is not a very good disinfectant. It's a cheap disinfectant. It's a readily available disinfectant. But if you follow the childcare or school guidelines or CDC guidelines of a quarter cup per gallon in 2 minutes, which actually most of the childcare centers were not even leaving, they weren't pre-cleaning, they weren't leaving it on for 2 minutes, they weren't rinsing it off. And if you do that, you're only killing 3 bacteria, no viruses. And so many of the, excuse me? Not at that. The efficacy data for EPA registration for that, you have to have triple the concentration of bleach to 3/4 a cup per gallon. You have to leave it on for 5 minutes. Nobody is doing that. Some of these safer disinfectants are much more effective. You leave them on for 1 minute and you don't have to rinse them off. So there are more effective disinfectants than bleach.
I'm going to ask about something else. Okay. They answer questions, okay?
Okay. Well, this was really a fabulous panel. I thank you all for organizing it. I learned a lot about it. And I work on chemicals policy. And so what I'm going to ask about is the independent third-party certifications with regard to the health hazards of chemicals. And I heard your presentation about the being scientifically based, you know, and the efforts that you go through to do research and everything. But, I mean, my worry is we have so many chemicals that are untested, you know, that even if they have effects, they're not going to show up like on the asthma gen list or the clinics do. That's not a testing machine, that's a passive reporting that comes as a result of who goes into clinics. So it's not very well suited for anything that kids want to get into anyway. But there's lots of allergens that are on that list, very likely. So, and that's not going to get picked up in these standards, you know. And I understand why people are using these authoritative bodies' lists, because that's but they're not very good, really, for anything. I mean, they're the best for carcinogens, but not very good for anything else. So I'm just wondering if you all see this field of third-party certifications sort of taking that next step and sort of really understanding what the ingredients are and disclosing the untested ingredients, you know, as part of the certification.
Sure. So we definitely use authoritative bodies when they're available for areas. And if there are issues that arise when we do the health and environmental impact assessment that aren't addressed by authoritative bodies, we do establish requirements that can add to that. One of the areas that we do a lot is prohibit explicitly certain materials. So there was a presentation earlier, there was a lot of talk about phthalates, for example. So Green Seal prohibits phthalates explicitly in the standards because there isn't a way to address the concerns associated with those materials. So there's other ways that the standards are able to address those concerns. I'm sure it's the process that we go through. I outlined the research takes a while, the stakeholder process takes a while, and as a result, there is a lag, definitely. That is associated with that. So we're not, you know, totally on top of the cutting edge research. But we, you know, we are a little bit more flexible, certainly, than just relying on authoritative bodies.
I think we also, as NGOs, went through and tried to say, don't just do the ones that we know, but if it's a class of chemicals, get rid of all the glycol ethers that are in this class of chemicals, or get all the ethanolamines. And then go after it in different ways. So going after the VOCs, going after it from a pH perspective. So we just kind of, you know, tried to use the best information you can, but you're right, there's still a lot of chemicals out there that we don't know about, and therefore, you know, it's as best as we could get it at this point, and the standard will continue to be improved. The more people who get involved, I'm gonna just say to you all, get involved with these standards. They've talked about 400 stakeholders, 350 of them at least were industry stakeholders. We need public health people to get involved and advocate for stronger standards in the standard setting process, because otherwise we're just outgunned like crazy.
I have to catch you. Yes.
So there was an interesting comment before that talked about custodial workers on the front line as they're working their whole day using these things. I don't want to disagree, but I want to sort of bring it back to the idea that teachers, for example, in schools are in there, based on my own research experience, longer than that sometimes, and they do have the right given budget cuts to bring in their own teaching, cleaning, and personal use supply. So I was just wondering if you could comment on, have any of you reached out, not just to custodians or to the companies, but trying to get teachers involved somehow in this purchasing process? And then the second part is, I heard nothing about ventilation, and while there's limited research in schools, that where some of us have done really increases the role of ventilation, because whether it's a green product or whatever, there are VOCs, whether they're just odorous or possibly toxic, but ventilation can reduce levels. I was wondering if you could comment on that.
Can I share my stuff in my everyday?
Sure.
We reached out to the teachers in Miami-Dade Public Schools. We went through superintendents and got all of the unions involved. And so what we have now is they have a lab that actually does third-party certification of all of their products that come into the school. Teachers no longer in that district bring their products in. They get products from the dispensing station and they're using those things in the schools. We were having problems when teachers brought in their products, and they brought in candles too. And the kids were having reactions. A lot of them had respiratory problems, had asthma. And so now that we've gone to environmentally preferable products, or green products as we call them, that we've eliminated that. And so it was some fighting to get us to that point. But that's a prime example. We're there now and it's working wonderfully, and we're trying to duplicate that around the country. Okay. Sir, right here.
You must be interesting Seal. The presentation was great. You know, I did what you said. I went to the bathroom and I bought one of the products. You know, and I think it's great. But, you know, I'm still surprised because, you know, in this product specifically, you use 99% water.
Yes.
And, you know, for the 1%, it says, you know, other ingredients, let me find it, so I get exactly what it says. Other ingredients present are less than 1%. But we don't know what are these products.
Yeah.
So still, you know, like, I think, you know, it's good to have, we need to know plastic products. And that's something that, you know, we all know, and the world needs to know. First thing, second thing, that we're failing that. And, you know, these guys, you're little. So, first thing. And second thing, what is the evaluation of the products that you use for these markets? You know, you base the result, you base your standards in about information. Many of the chemicals are not evaluated. You know, so I know it's just 1%. But 1% for a person or for a people is producing, you know, it's working 8 hours a day, 10 hours a day, it's still a problem. So, you know, my question is, I mean, do we still have to serve people? You know, if we don't find a solution for that, we don't. You know? You have to be honest, because we're playing with, you know, with the health of the kids, we're playing with the health of the world. You know, and in the second line, you know, I go to the restroom and I pay attention to this and also pay attention to how I wipe my hands. And I use green seal paper. But I rather prefer to use a hand dryer because I'm not afraid of producing waste. And I know that electricity is an renewable resource. So, you know, like, just, you know, putting this in mind, because we need to protect. We really, I appreciate your effort, you know, to protect people. But we need to think more in this. And probably we cannot certify all the products. So that would be nice.
Can I throw something? It gets back to me. And I see you back there. I see you all there. But the other thing that you have to understand is with all of these programs, and I know it was in one of your slides where you talked about training is important. And so we still train workers on HACCP under all those requirements that come in the workplace. We deal with the ventilation like this gentleman over here said. I know, but what we're still saying is what we're trying to do is minimize what they're being exposed to, but also including those other occupational safety and health practices that the employers are supposed to be doing as well. To minimize. I'm not saying we're
going to
eradicate, but we can minimize.
But let me just answer what he said also.
So we have to be careful with that, because we are sending the message that this is good for people, and then we don't know what's going on, so we don't
Let me just answer. If that's a Green Seal certified product, then the concentrate was evaluated for all those different criteria. So that that's really the best standard that's out there. So and I'm saying that if if the product is a Green Seal certified product, and Cheryl can talk about this too, then the concentrate was evaluated for all those different criteria that she talked about. So, you know, that's really the strongest standard that's out there. It already went through making sure that it's not, that 1% doesn't have any carcinogens, it doesn't have any reproductive toxins, it doesn't have specific chemicals of concern that are commonly in there. And the reason it has 99% water is because that was a concentrate that was then, water was added on site, so you reduce the transportation impacts as well. So the.
I'm going to ask the rest of you who have questions. Please come up here. They'll be here. But we got to get out of this room. Thank you for your questions. Come on up.
That is fine.